And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone!
Welcome to the 3-0 Show. I'm Richard Rowley here with Eno Saris. Today it is Thursday, October 5th. All of the wildcard series have already ended, which is unfortunate for MLB, unfortunate for the broadcast partners, but it does give us plenty of stuff to discuss as we sit here and prepare for the division series. As we record this, for those who didn't watch, the Phillies won 7-1 in the second game. They sweep the series. The Twins win 2-0 over the Blue Jays. They sweep the series. The Rangers won 7-1 over the Tampa Bay Rays. They sweep the series, and our final sweep is the Diamondbacks, who beat the Brewers 5-2. Eno, were you surprised about any of these outcomes at all when you look at the teams that are advancing here?
I think the most surprising one might have been the Arizona Diamondbacks. I guess I would say this before the game started, before we, once games 162 were done. Since then, there's been a series of events that were unfortunate. Milwaukee Brewers losing Brandon Woodruff was unfortunate. But then once they won a game that Brandon Pfaadt started, things started to turn for me for Arizona, because then they got Zach Gallen in their second game. They didn't even use Merrill Kelly. So that negated some of the advantage that the Brewers had on the pitching side. And the Arizona lineup, as it was during the regular season, ended up being a better lineup in that series that they had. Arizona out-homered Milwaukee 4-1, and every team that out-homered their opponent advanced.
Interesting. And the Diamondbacks extended GM Mike Hazen through 2028. So clearly things are looking up in Arizona. I really liked their celebration when they went to the postseason. Not last night. We couldn't joke because they were in Milwaukee.
Jumping into the pool
was amazing. It was a good one.
Fun one only they get to do. Unless the Rays, when they advance, jump into the Ray pool. Maybe not.
Tank.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not a good idea. You know what? I was a little surprised with Texas and Tampa Bay too, though. It looked like the Rays, who all year long, we talked about all the adversity they had, missing so many key players. It just looks like they ran out of gas. I mean, that first game, 4 errors, a franchise record, just really sloppy play all around. And Texas just went out there, and the games never really felt particularly close at all when you look at it. And I thought, I'm not surprised that Texas won, but to me that looked like one that maybe could go 3 and that would be full of classic games. And it wasn't that way at all. Tampa Bay just simply looked like a team that was – ready to go home, which is so unlike them, right? They're usually such a crisp team. And there were some issues, I think, defensively early on in the year. And people were like, wait till we get some of our main key guys back, like Siri. And, they got those guys back. And those are the guys who had some issues in the field.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Manny Margot was sitting in for Siri in the second game because Siri had just come back from a hand injury. And Manny Margot started that second game with a flub. And this is one of the reasons I hate errors as a stat. They didn't give an error. They gave a double. But Manny Margot just totally misread the ball and could have caught that thing. And that's how game 2 started, was with an error there. I think that losing Shane McClanahan and Wander Franco had sort of reverberations throughout. It's obvious if you have Shane pitching one of those games, you think you can keep them down a little bit more. But then I think a little bit less obvious is Wander is a plus-plus defender on top of everything else. And if you have him there at short, then you have Taylor Walls as a defensive replacement or a guy who can play third for you for more defense. Paredes plays second. You know, there's these sort of cascading things. If Siri's fully healthy, if Wander's in there, that defense is better. So I'm not making excuses for them. I'm just pointing out that, like, I think, you know, some of their excellence was robbed with those unfortunate events that they had. And then the other thing that makes me wonder a little bit is that there is research that suggests that every pitch your reliever throws over the course of the season makes them worse. It's over at Baseball Prospectus. And I just wonder, you know, just seeing the Giants collapse this year, doing a very Raysian model, and then the Rays, you know, now since they made it to the World Series, have won one postseason game. I just wonder if you tax your bullpen that hard all season, if there are some sort of ramifications. It didn't end up being the bullpen's fault this time, but it's just a thing I wonder. In the end, though, when I've looked at what matters in the postseason, offense actually matters the most. I know people love to talk about pitching and defense. The Texas Rangers against the Rays just look like an offense that couldn't stop. Listen to this. They hit 280, 353, 493. They had an 846 slugging against the Rays, who had one of the better pitching staffs in the league. The Rays hit 215, 227, 246 with a 473 OPS. Their OPS is almost half of the Rangers. So that Rangers lineup looks nasty, nasty. I don't know where you take a break as a pitcher. The Rangers immediately sort of, I think, put us on notice with that series.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I don't know how many people watched the Rangers down the stretch. There was so much talk about their pitching issues and their bullpen leads baseball during the regular season and blown saves. But as you mentioned, they are among the best in chase rate, among the lowest in whiff rate. They are just a really strong, potent lineup. This isn't like a one trick pony by any means. And I think it's going to be so fascinating. We'll get later on to what we think is going to happen preview wise. They're playing the number one seed, the Baltimore Orioles. That series will start on Saturday. Tomorrow is the workout day. So in my head, I'm like, I'm going to the stadium. Saturday, Sunday. Saturday, a 1 o'clock game, because there is a Billy Joel Stevie Nicks concert in across the street.
Nobody second fiddle in their own stadium.
Yeah. Nobody can tell me that the Orioles expected to be good this year when they signed off on that.
You're right.
Right? Like, nobody can tell me that they thought they were going to be in the DS. Losing that game, right? They thought they were going to be the one seed in the DS, right? If they were a lower seed like Texas, they'd be on the road. So interesting. But one more point about the Rays, which I thought was unfortunate, you know, is the attendance. Game one, 19,704. The lowest attendance for a playoff game, not including, of course, the 2020 COVID season with no fans, since game seven of the 1919 World Series. And, you know, it's really unfortunate.
There's a weird piece of context. Jacob Pomerantke on Twitter. In 1919, you know why that they had such bad attendance for game seven?
No.
That was when they had 8-game or 9-game World Series. So it wasn't the final game. And the Reds in that were trying to force everybody to buy tickets in 4-ticket blocks, in 4-game blocks. And so they didn't make any tickets available for Game 7 until the day of. And so there was like this weird ticket selling thing. So, and I know there's excuses for Tampa, which is it was a weekday, you know, during the day. And that's an excuse, but we've had other weekday games and it still was the worst. And it's just weird for me that they're going to build a new stadium right next to it that's going to have the same transit issues, same location. You know, is it everyone's going to go now because it's a little bit fancier? Maybe for a year or two, but I think there's some real problems with that location. And that's what we saw. And the Phillies, that's an opposite to that, are just blowing decibel records, you know, are just like loud all the way through. And that's got to be a little bit different for a player to to engage in. There was pictures of Randy Arozarena playing for Mexico. And, you know, that's a bit of an adopted home country for him. And the fans going nuts for him all the way through those WBC games. And then he in Tampa, he might feel all alone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was at those WBC games in Miami. It was wild. It was really cool to see Lone Depot Park where the Marlins play and where usually the atmosphere isn't great. To see it be just this huge, you know, huge, huge event. And it proves that baseball can be big in that area. And that kind of leads us to the next series, which is the Marlins-Phillies. Now, you know, the Marlins only drew, they didn't draw 2 million this year, but their attendance, you can look at it how you want, right? But their attendance is up more than 40% over the last 2 years, 28% up this year. I think they've done a great job of creating a likable team, I think. And I wrote this on The Athletic, what Kim Ng has done culturally in changing the way that organization runs and saying, we need ideas. I don't care who you are. This is a team effort. Bringing in a guy like Skip Schumacher, who has won with the Cardinals, who has this like go, go, go positive attitude. The Marlins look totally overmatched for most of that wild card series. You know, it never looked like they had a chance at all. But I think when you look at some of the guys they're missing, including their best pitcher, it seems like the organization is headed in a better direction than it was before. And I also wonder how much, and you know, obviously I cover the playoffs every year. I went to Philly last year. It's a different place to play. It's a very tough place to play as a visitor. I wonder how much that played into a fairly young, inexperienced Marlins team going there, Philly taking the lead early. Now, the Marlins did lead baseball in come-from-behind wins. They were really good at coming back late in games. But this isn't May. This isn't June. This is Philly in the playoffs, and they just looked a little kind of deer in headlights-y at times, I thought.
Yeah, I think that Kim Ng has done a really good job of inching that lineup forward, but it still was a poor it was one of the worst lineups in the playoffs. It's either them or the Brewers. And, you know, in those two games, they hit 194 with a 242 slugging. So,
yeah.
You know, they just didn't have a chance. But I'm picking the Phillies to win it all, as I did on this show before the playoffs started. And part of that is the bullpen. And we've seen that, you know, Nolan Wheeler shoved, but they once they were out of the game, it didn't get any better for the Phillies. And they've got six guys who can throw 98 in that bullpen, and then Craig Kimbrell. So, you know, it's a really good bullpen. It's a really good offense. The front two are really good. You know, and the things like the things like defense, yeah, that's a flaw for the Phillies, but, you know, they found Johan Rojas over the course of this year and signed Trey Turner and, you know, they've done certain things. Brandon Marsh being in the corner and putting, you know, Schwarber at DH or whoever at DH, that improves the team. Putting Harper at first base improves the team defensively. So this is a team that has sort of under the radar gotten better defensively, and that's their biggest flaw. So this is a really, really good team. Marlins ran into a buzzsaw. I expect the Phillies to continue winning.
Yeah, I don't think it's really fair to look at the Marlins lineup and say what they did against the Phillies because, as you said, I think Nola and Wheeler were terrific. And if the Phillies are going to get where they need to go, and that includes here in this division series getting past the Braves, who had the best record in the National League, the best record in all of baseball, they are the one seed. If they're going to do that, to me, they have to get those performances from those guys. Yes, the bullpen is good, but, you know, the Braves has such a historic offense that you can't have a start where Nola and Wheeler give up 4 or 5 runs and are out of the game in the second and third inning, right? I don't care how good your bullpen is. That's going to cost you in a 5-game series. So to me, if you look at the way this Phillies team is set up, can they beat Atlanta? I think they can. I picked them in our, you know, Athletic picks that I think are going to be released pretty soon for a lot of the reasons that you mentioned. I also think that Atlanta has some issues here. Charlie Morton's got he's injured. He's not going to be starting. Max Fried, they say he's going to be fine, but he had the blister that ended his regular season pretty
and
early.
Even so the game that he pitched, he pitched a sort of a simulated game. He pitched it with a Band-Aid on, yes. Which I mean, I think is hopeful. He's pitching, you know,
sure.
he's staying ready, but it wasn't like he pitched with no restrictions. There was still a Band-Aid on the finger.
Right. So I think it's going to be a fascinating series. Wouldn't shock me at all if this goes 5. These two teams hate each other. Alec Boehm yesterday said it's going to be a war. And I think it was aptly put. I mean, this is going to be a great rivalry. I almost hate, you know, when we have these great series and they're these and they're in the DS, right? This should be the NLCS, it feels like, doesn't it?
There's some complaints about
the other
that.
National League teams, but it's
there's
just
some complaints about why we don't sort of reseed after the wild card race, after the wild cards.
Football reseeds. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And if we reseeded, then the Phillies would play, right? That's how it would work, I think.
If you reseeded,
I think the Phillies
would
play somebody
Brewers
else.
Weren't the Brewers were a higher seed because they won their division.
Right, but if you reseed, then the Phillies become the second seed, I think.
Oh, based on record?
Yeah, I think even, yeah. Yeah, because Arizona's through.
What about the Dodgers?
Oh, right. So they'd be 1, 2, 3, 4. So the Phillies would be 3. So wouldn't they play the Dodgers?
Yeah.
Because the Dodgers are 2.
Yes. And then 4 would be Arizona.
So it would be Arizona against the Braves.
Yes.
I see the argument for that.
Yeah.
But Arizona against the Braves would be like, would it be that much fun to handicap? I mean, I like Arizona.
Whoa, easy there, you know. Momentum is real, though. The problem is the best.
We have forgot one DS. Series. We have to do one wild card series. We have to do one more wild card series before we start previewing.
Oh yeah, we didn't. Oh, you're right. We totally missed the Twins. You know what? And they did something historic, and we totally bypassed them. The Twins beat the Blue Jays, and I don't know, main takeaways from that, besides the fact that they finally won a playoff game, and now they won a playoff series.
First time in 19 years.
Yeah, I thought the play of the game was Vlad Jr. and them being able to throw him out there. Because when you look at how that was done, they said later, Carlos Correa noticed the crowd was so loud, they weren't really able to hear the third base coach. And so they did it. They sent the message through PitchCom.
That's
the game. I know Toronto didn't score. I know Toronto fans are upset, and rightfully so. I mean,
is it unfair at all?
What?
That they can communicate, but the offense can't?
No, I mean, here's how baseball works is, you know, you exploit every single advantage you have.
That's true. So also, they have
the same advantage.
There have been well-documented foibles with base running in Toronto that were through the year. But also, the other iconic moment for me was Bo Bichette running through a stop sign and getting thrown out at the plate in the other game. So
game one.
You know, so there's two kind of weird base running things, and I don't know what that speaks to. Base running seems to be equal parts preparation and coaching. It's not something that I want to all put fully on the third base coach. I mean, he put up a stop sign, you know, for Bo. I'm sure he was yelling back for Vladdy, right? But it, that's something that I take away from that. I think I probably underrated Sonny Gray and Pablo Lopez. They both took big strides this year. After, you know, looking at my AL Cy Young ballot, I kind of appreciated them a little bit more than I had, before I filed that, that vote. And so, you know, I think that that's a real fearsome twosome. And John Duran as the closer is nasty, 100 miles an hour with a 98 mile an hour splitter.
Yeah.
Don't worry, they call it a splinker, but they only call it a splinker because they think it's weird for people to call something that goes 100 miles an hour a splitter. So it's still a splitter.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it's a great pitch and. You know, I think Griffin Jax is good. I think that they are good in all the places that need to be good. If you think about their lineup and the Rangers, something that's similar is that it's hard to take a break. You know,
yeah,
if you look
a lot
at these,
runs.
Yeah, if you look and also if you look at the skill positions, catcher, shortstop, center. You know, that's a place where even the Astros or the Rays, for example, will put defense over offense and say, okay, well, maybe they can hit a bomb or whatever, but, you know, it's more about defense in those spots. But if you look at the Rangers and Twins, they have good offensive options in those spots. And so that makes them a more formidable team. Of course, Michael Taylor, maybe not as good, or Jonah Heim, maybe better than the Twins catchers, but I think there's a similarity there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, and as we're kind of saying sayonara to these teams that lost, really ugly, ugly series for Toronto. And Whit Merrifield, after the game, after they took Jose Berrios out early, said, quote, "I hated it, frankly. It's not what cost us the game, but it's the kind of baseball decisions that are taking away from managers in baseball at this stage of the game." So directly firing shots there at the front office, at, you know, whoever is saying before the game, this is it, this guy can only go here, or we have telling John Snyder he's got to come out here. So really an ugly showing, I think, by Toronto. And you wonder, you know, this team had this window we kept talking about with these young players. Remember when they came up with Vladdy and Bichette, and it was like, all right, you know, what are we doing here, right? What have they accomplished? They haven't been able to go deep into the postseason. And you just wonder how much pressure the front office is going to be under now, to kind of reverse this. You know, you look at last year, they take Snyder, they take the interim tag off of Snyder, and, you know, they seem like they're kind of headed in the right direction. This is I think a massive blow to a fan base that really felt like they had a chance, even though they came in as the second wild card team. I think they like their chances against the Twins, you know, the weakest division winner. And not only were they not able to advance, they didn't look good and they were swept out. So where do you see this for Toronto?
Yeah, it's super weird. To me, it's weird that they weren't that great of an offensive team this year. And yeah. I put a fair amount of the blame on Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s shoulders. He had a really poor year. And I know he was still sort of like 15% better than league average with a stick, but that's not necessarily what they need from him. And so I just wonder, you know, what they're going to do. I think they'll probably just tinker around the edges and try again. As for that decision, I think one of the things that people believe the least in terms of the analytics is this. No matter how good your pitcher has been for the first three innings, nothing, it doesn't help predict how they're going to do in the fourth inning. You know, you know, a pitcher, basically the way to say it is, a pitcher's hot until he's not. And so what does predict how the pitcher's going to do in the fourth inning is how good that pitcher's been all year, and how good that pitcher's been in certain situations. And so Berrios against lefties, second time through the order, gives up a lot more slugging. He was facing Max Kepler, who's been a good lefty. And, you know, by the numbers, it was a decision that, you know, not only did the manager sign off on, but was made in concert with the front office before the game. I'm sure of it. Yeah. And I understand why they did that. At the other hand, you know, I was talking to players in the Giants clubhouse about this sort of thing, where they said, we're all out here, we have eyes, we can see when someone's dealing. Berrios was throwing harder than usual. He was locating his spots well.
Yeah. There has to be some give and take in the playoffs, in my opinion. Like, the spotlight is too big. This isn't a random game in May, right? Maybe Snyder did sign off before the game, but I still think you have to give, like you said, the guys who are there a little autonomy, don't you, to make these decisions?
But I also remember a really iconic moment was the manager coming out to take Matt Harvey out of a World Series game and Matt Harvey arguing his way back onto the mound and blowing the game.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's always a chance, but like, good luck taking Max Scherzer out in some of these situations, right? Like,
well, I mean, they have before, but he hasn't been happy about it. You know, it's an ongoing debate. There's always room for feel. I'm never going to argue against feel. I tend to think that analytics is a good way to win a lot of games during the regular season. And I'm not saying you should throw it out completely in the postseason. But there's so, like, when we're making predictions and we filed our predictions, it might surprise people, but I don't look at that many numbers when I make my predictions for the postseason, because when I've run the numbers for what works in the postseason, there's very little. Hitting works. Yes. You know, hitting is actually better than pitching and defense. That surprises people. But it's a tiny little bit. Everything that correlates well for regular season wins does not correlate as well for postseason wins. It's a bit of a crapshoot. If it's going to be a crapshoot, then allow for more feel in the postseason than you would during the regular season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote this in our predictions. Momentum is real in October. It is. There's a big difference when a team goes up 3-0, right? Like, it's just... These games are all so important that it's tough to replicate. You're right. And there's not that.
Yeah. How much air went out of the room, you know, in Milwaukee when they went up 5-2 or whatever. And, right. You know, when Arizona went up 5-2, how much air went out of the room when the Rangers got to 7, you know what I mean? It's just,
exactly.
You know, the excitement goes down. Even the players themselves start to doubt whether, you know, I mean, they're human beings. They're going to start to doubt whether they can win that game.
Exactly. So we kind of previewed Philly Atlanta. Let's stay in the NL and get to the DS. The Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, as we said, if they had reseeded, it might have been a little bit different. According to you, I think you're real down on Arizona here. I think there's a way Arizona beats the Dodgers.
I filed a pick Arizona winning.
You did? Okay. So like, I don't think... So again, you're right. It's hard to back up your arguments during the postseason. I think that the Dodgers are more beatable than they have been in years past, similar to the Astros, who we'll get to on the AL side. This isn't the Dodgers, juggernaut of years past. Their pitching can be a little susceptible. I think Arizona can pitch with them. I think
that's where the light went off for me. I think Arizona can pitch with them. I agree with you.
Yes, because you can use Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly twice. And I think that you then take their rotation and you're like, I'm good here. The Dodgers are going to have to do some innovative things, I think, to cover these innings.
Kershaw is throwing 89. I mean, this is a Kershaw that we already during his prime were saying wasn't a good postseason pitcher. I never really agreed with that. But at 89 miles an hour, Corbin Carroll can take in deep, you know, even lefty on lefty. So, you know, I think that this is a lesser Kershaw. I love Bobby Miller, but this is the first time he's been in the postseason. He's got to be a little bit tired in terms of the length of the season. And Ryan Pepiot last year couldn't find the plate. So, you know, this year he's been better with the command, and I sort of believe the changes he's made. But if he can't find the plate, you're putting Lance Lynn out there, who, even though he improved with the Dodgers, still gave up 2 homers per 9 with the Dodgers. Yeah. So in that game, as much as, you know, Brandon Pfaadt, you know, may not be the pitcher that prospect hounds thought maybe he'd be, ever since he moved on the mound, Brandon Pfaadt has been a league average pitcher, in the second half. So am I going to take a league average pitcher with multiple pitches who doesn't have the same command issues or homer issues as Lynn? I think I'll probably take the D-backs in that third game. So I take Gallen over Kershaw. I take Kelly Miller might be a toss up, but then I'll take the Pfaadt over the collection of Lynn and Pepiot. So
yeah,
And then the D-backs bullpen has really benefited from slimming down. They did not have a good bullpen all year, but if you're talking about just Seawald,
correct. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, if you're talking about these the Nationals 2019 Washington Nationals playbook, right? If you're going to shrink a staff, all of a sudden, you like the Diamondbacks. And I think if I'm Arizona, I'm saying all we got to do is split out here in LA, right?
Yeah.
All the pressure is on the Dodgers. all we got to do out here is win one of these games and get it back home. And then we feel okay. Right. So, and listen, I don't want to take anything away from this Dodgers team. They still have two guys who are probably going to finish in the top three, the National League MVP, Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. If I'm Arizona, I'm looking at those two guys and I'm like, we have to keep these guys in the park. We have to keep these guys from absolutely crushing us, right? You take your chances with the rest of the lineup. Those are the two guys you have to find a way to neutralize to some extent. Make them mere mortals.
You could walk them some.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly. I mean, if you walk Muncy and Betts, you know, then it's all on JD Martinez's shoulders to some extent. You know, it's not the same lineup as the Rangers where you're like, mm-hmm. where do I take a break? There are breaks in that lineup, you know?
Yes.
And there are cracks in the pitching. So I don't know. Maybe it's a bit of a reach. Arizona was not one of the best teams in the regular season and the Dodgers were. But this is not the same Dodgers team that started out in May, you know? Like, where is Julio Urias and where is, you know, Dustin May, who's super nasty? And there was always the promise that Walker Buehler was going to come back. So that's really three big arms that I think that they were circling for October that are not there.
Yeah, and I think, again, if you're the Diamondbacks, you're playing with nothing to lose. No one expects you to win. No one expects you to win the last round. You're just rolling right now. You're rolling. Mm-hmm. And
Corbin Carroll's coming out party. I mean, this guy's.
Yeah.
I'm glad that everyone's getting to see how awesome he is. You know, I did a long interview with him about him as a leader. He's an interesting leader because he's not loud. And I think a lot of people think that to be a leader, you need to, you know, give speeches and be loud. But he puts it all in line and he does a lot of things that people don't know about in terms of like taking the other young guys out for dinner and fostering relationship with other players. He offers hitting advice in the complex. You know, he's just really personable. He knows the names of your kids after he meets you one time. You know, he's that kind of guy he's a future coach type of guy where he's listening to you. He's present with you and he cares about you. And that's an interesting thing because it's going to get them the most out of his teammates, I think. Unfortunate about Gabriel Moreno. Yeah. We're going to hear some news about him. He got hit in the head and a bit of a concussion protocol situation there. But with catchers, and I didn't know this until they said this on the cast, catchers can get back in before other positions. So
I didn't know that.
This is some weird thing where, like, even though Moreno might be in the concussion protocol, he doesn't have to do the full 7 days if he clears it, because as a catcher, he can get back in, which is, to me,
because he wears
weird.
The mask, maybe because he has head protection already built in. Yeah, that would be my thought. But it's so interesting about Corbin Carroll, who is going to be a slam dunk, NL Rookie of the Year, AL Rookie of the Year, also a slam dunk, Gunnar Henderson with the Baltimore Orioles. They're playing Texas. So as we talked about, is no joke at all. I mean, this is a Texas team that has paid a lot of money to turn things around, and credit to them and that they have done that, right? And so I think when you look at this series, you know, we talked about the Rangers lineup, but the Orioles lineup's nothing to sniff at either. I mean, they are a group of young guys who are, you know, really still kind of at the beginning of a lot of their careers. So it's almost hard to predict what they're going to do. I said to someone, they can get swept out of this series or they can win the World Series. And neither of those things would shock me, right? Because I think when you're dealing with these young teams, you have no clue how they're going to react to a playoff atmosphere. Are they going to lose one game, get scared and fold? Or are they going to go out, beat the Rangers Saturday and say, no one's beaten us, and just steamroll themselves through the World Series parade, right? They're a tough team to figure out. Now, I do think everyone was concerned about their starting pitching, and they have kind of alleviated that, because what they're going to do is they have a legitimate number one guy in Kyle Bradish. Grayson Rodriguez has been excellent. John Means has been good. So they actually, in a five-game series, have enough, and they're going to take some of these starters and put them in the bullpen. Jack Flaherty's going to be in the bullpen. Tyler Wells closed the game that they clinched the American League East. And so what they're going to do is kind of help their bullpen a little that way. And their bullpen is unquestionably better than the Rangers, because, as I mentioned, the Rangers bullpen, 4.77 regular season ERA, one of the worst in baseball, all 33 blown saves, even without Felix Bautista, who was the Orioles closer, who is getting Tommy John surgery, or already got it, I think. They tried to bring him along. They do win the battle of the bullpens. But is it going to come down to the bullpens, or is it going to come down to the offense? right?
And I actually think that the bullpen thing is tighter than some of those results numbers suggest. And we talked about it a little bit with Arizona and the slimming down. The Rangers have slimmed this down now to just Chapman, Leclerc, Sabores, and Haney, really.
Yeah.
That's their bullpen. And if you think about it, Haney's best pitch is his fastball. And if he gets a little bit of a boost velo-wise in the bullpen, that's like not a situational lefty, but a lefty that may even have a little bit of length for you. Sabores is a big velo righty. Leclerc is big velo with closing experience, and he closed out some of their big wins and in the wild card. And Chapman still has his stuff. I know the command isn't there. But that foursome is a lot better, I think, than the overall bullpen numbers suggest for the Rangers. And so I think that it's a little bit tighter. Once you take Bautista out, I was looking at who actually would pitch for Baltimore in their bullpen, and it's Cano, Kolum, Flaherty, and maybe Fujinami, or...
No, they can't trust him at all. His command has been horrible.
His command is so bad.
Yeah. He may not make the playoff roster, and it wouldn't surprise me. I think they're going to Wells. I think that what they're going Wells. To do...
They're
not going to trim down to four. They're going to play matchups.
Yeah,
they're
going to play,
How do I get my outs here? How do I get my outs here?
Flaherty and Wells in the bullpen.
Yeah, so they are.
But you
not
see,
going
like the names that
down.
I'm giving
right,
you,
yeah,
like it's
yeah.
a little bit closer than some of the results suggest, I think. And hitting wise,
I also think
the Rangers' offense is so good.
Yes,
it is so good.
So it's good.
Really
so you
good.
Wonder if I'm Texas, I'm not thinking we got to split. I'm thinking I want to win game one. This is a young team, an inexperienced team.
I want to tell them we're here.
I want to win game one and see how they react. Right. I think that if you're Texas, that's what you got to look at.
But who starts game one? Is it
probably
Dunning?
Bradish for the
no,
Orioles?
For the Rangers.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't think they've announced any probables either. Maybe.
I mean, I think it's too soon for
Eovaldi. Can you bring Montgomery?
Yeah, maybe Montgomery. Maybe you can start again with Montgomery, Eovaldi, and then Dunning.
Yeah, because Montgomery was game one, so that was Tuesday.
Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday,
no.
Friday, Saturday.
No, you got to go him Sunday.
So I think you want to go Dunning, Montgomery.
Yeah.
Dunning, Montgomery, Eovaldi.
Yep,
Dunning's been good, but he never really had good strikeout minus walk totals. His stuff does not suggest that he was as dominant. Like, he was dominant in the first half, but he throws like 91, and he's more of a mix and match guy. So he can do it on any given night, and he actually might give a young lineup fits because he throws four pitches, right? So if he's just going to, like, you know, throw the slider when they expect fastball and so on and so forth, then maybe he can give this lineup fits. But it's not the best pitching matchup for them on the starting side. Like,
they're
going
to have to slug their way out of this one.
Yeah, I don't know if people understood. Like, Bradish and Grayson Montgomery in the second half both had ERAs under three. So they were really excellent. And Bradish is going to be on a bunch of Cy Young ballots. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the pitching matchup favors them. But the hitting matchup, I think I'm taking the Rangers pretty comfortably. They're worst hitters. Leody Taveras, Jonah Heim, you know, Robbie Grossman. These are all
middle of the order bats on a bad team. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Grossman maybe not. But, like, yeah, I mean, Grossman is a guy who walks all the time and takes really professional at-bats. He could be a number two for a lot of other teams. So,
yeah.
You know, definitely this is a lineup where it's really hard to take a break, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on those pitchers. So I expect this to be kind of like 5-3 games and 6-4. I don't expect any sort of 1-0 games. Of course, now we'll see some 1-0, but whatever.
Yeah, now we're going to see exactly who are you taking. I think this goes 5. I think this one may go 5. I think these are pretty evenly matched.
Here's the dumbest thing in the world. I picked all upsets.
So you have the Rangers.
I picked the Rangers, yeah.
Interesting. Who aren't that much of an underdog? I have the Orioles here. It's going to be, I think, as I said, a 5-game series. I think it's going to be a fascinating series. I'm curious to see how Brandon Hyde manages versus Bruce Bochy, who has won the World Series 3 times. I think that counts for something this time of year, too.
The Orioles kind of give me the Phillies vibe in terms of, like, you know, vibes. Like, in terms of, like,
last year Philly vibes or this year?
No, just in terms of the fandom, like getting the fans on board with the, I think they've done a really good job of including the water stuff is really great. I don't know if they want to do as much in October with the water and like soak their fans when the weather's a little different, but
It's still 80 degrees here.
Yeah, okay, good. So, yeah, a little warming. I do think that they've done a good job of rallying and having good vibes around the team. Like, that's something that, and it, maybe it comes more naturally to young players because they're all kind of the same age. They came up together, you know. They're thinking about the same things.
I agree with you. I think there is a little, you know, a little good juju going on right now. They're not a team who feels like anybody can beat them. I think game one, like I said, is going to be really important. If they get punched in the mouth, how do they respond? Mm. Right.
Especially if they get punched in the mouth of Dane Dunning, because then they have to be like, yes. Oh crap, their better pitchers go tomorrow.
Yeah. So it's going to be really interesting.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The final matchup, though, we have, of course, the Twins earned the right to advance to play the Astros. Similar to the Dodgers, you know, this isn't the Houston Astros of the last few years. They are a beatable team, more so than they have been in previous October. So I actually picked the Twins here. In our you know, picks that we had to make for The Athletic. I think the Twins pitching has been really good. I think they're a lineup that, as you mentioned, can do a lot of things well. They can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And I think it's time for Houston to have a early exit. You know, I mean, this is a group that struggled at certain points during the season, looked like they may be on the outside of the playoff picture, had some key injuries, and then was able to win the West. And certainly, if experience matters, you have to favor Houston in all of this. But I don't think that matters as much as people think in between the lines, if you have been there or you haven't been there. And I think momentum is a big thing. The Twins have finally won a playoff game. They finally got that off their back. Now they've won a playoff series. They are literally playing with house money, much like Arizona. I expect them to be a looser team. I expect them to be a team that thinks, hey, we can beat anybody here. You know, we just went into Milwaukee and won. Yeah, Houston's probably going to be a tougher place crowd-wise. But I really like the way this Twins team is set up. I like the way Rocco Baldelli operates. I think Minnesota is going to win this series. This also may go 4 or 5 in my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, Minnesota spent a lot of the year trying to keep guys healthy, get the right lineup in place. There's been some real toggling in that lineup. So if you look at full season numbers for, you know, the lineups, you might think that Houston is way better than Minnesota offensively. Minnesota was like 10th and Houston was like 3rd for the full season. That flips a little bit, and Minnesota was the better offensive team in September. And the reason why that matters is it's not just that they were hot in September. It's that when they were playing in September, they were playing like Edward Julian, their young second baseman, got the most plate appearances in September in the entire team and was excellent. It was 38% better than league average with a stick. That he wasn't there earlier, you know, so it's kind of unfair to compare for the full season. Another guy that was very different in the second half was Max Kepler. He was 37% better than league average with a stick in September, and he had the second most. They also found Matt Wallner, young guy. And then Royce Lewis has been on again, off again in terms of health and caused Correa. So now they're healthy with Correa and Lewis. Buxton is trying to get healthy. And so, you know, those are three key offensive parts. And now you're adding Julian and you're adding Kirilloff and you're adding these young guys and Lewis. You're adding these young guys to a healthy veteran core. So, you know, I think when people talk about getting lucky in the postseason or getting right or getting on momentum, one of the things I hear when I hear momentum is health.
Yeah.
It's health, yeah. You know? And so in terms of lineup health and in terms of rotation health, like the Twins are at their best right now. They've got everybody ready to go. They're all playing well. You know, they've got Sonny Gray and Pablo Lopez and Duren and Jackson, the bullpen. They've got the weapons to beat this Astros team.
So you're also going Twins?
I did. I went with four upsets.
Look at you go. I love it. I mean, listen, it's so hard this time of year to make any kind of picks. I'm sure some of these will be right. Some of these will make us look foolish immediately. But, you know, we will see.
I decided to have fun with it. Once I picked a couple, I think the one I feel the least good about is the Arizona pick. The Dodgers are just, they'll find a way. I feel like almost like they can mix and match, and their bullpen is actually fairly deep. So if they just get four from a starter, they might be okay. And if they do a bullpen game, they could almost win a bullpen game. That's the one I feel the least good about. The one I feel the strongest about is actually Phillies over Braves. Just because, wow. You know, when I'm talking about momentum and health, like, you know, not having Morton, having Fried just coming back off this blister, yeah. Just makes me worried that their starting rotation is not as healthy as it needs to be. Maybe they'll just win games 9-7. Like, that's a possibility too.
Yeah, maybe. But here's the thing about the playoffs, though. I can make a case for all the teams I just picked against to win the series, too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing about these short series.
I mean, I've been talking all this time about the Rangers' offense. Like, the Braves' offense is the best of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. It'll be very interesting. But one quick thing I do want to hit on before we leave. Jerry DePoto, Seattle head of baseball operations, made some big headlines this week. Seattle, for those of you who aren't aware, just misses making the playoffs, unfortunately, in the West. They were my pick to go to the World Series, so I will wear that. I will wear that complete and utter miss. Said some really interesting things. Basically, he said, quote, "We're doing the fan base a favor by asking their patience to win a World Series while we continue to build a sustainably good roster." And then he said, "We're always trying to win 54% of our games," which social media naturally had a field day with. I mean, people have already printed 54% on shirts. I saw a jersey that said 54. It's a Mariners jersey. But really, my issue with this, you know, is this, not that he spoke, it's that this is how they all think for the most part. I'd say 90% of baseball operations people feel this way for a myriad of reasons. One of those is selfish. It is a lot easier to keep your job if your team is
consistently
just
winning.
Good enough, right? Like, you're kind of there. You are what I like to call the Cleveland Guardians of MLB, right? Very safe structure up top. Those guys have been there forever. And they, you know, they're never really tanking, but they're never really going all in. But they're always like, maybe if this goes cover right,
cover your
goes right,
ass. C-Y-A.
Yes, then we'll get in. And so the bold moves are what gets people fired. The Dave Dombrowski's, right? Like, he's the one who
fired after
won a World Series.
Yeah.
Win a World Series, but the farm system's trash, right? Like, people who push all their chips in, those are how jobs get lost. Mm-hmm. So you look at the Mets, put all their chips in. Now they got David Stearns and they fired Buck Showalter. And, you know, the Padres had a press conference to say Bob Melvin, who's under contract, is returning. That's how crazy stuff's going over there. So, you know, there. To me, it is so infuriating that this sport has become so safe and we have become so obsessed with efficiency. Fans aren't rooting for efficiency. Fans mm-hmm. want you to go get the best players that you possibly can all the time. Fans right. don't. What bothers me is the only sustained tank and we're good for a really long stretch has been the Houston Astros. Mm-hmm. Nobody else has been able to do that. So the Orioles look like they may here. They look like they're at the precipice of maybe a 5-6 year good run, but we don't know that yet for sure. So
they declined to add to it.
Right. So exactly. Because they, you know, it's like, so we want to be good, but not so good that we push too many chips in. And to me, this is an epidemic and it's ruining the enjoyment of the sport to some extent.
Yeah, and I can, as an analytics guy, I can understand the idea that if you plan for 88, there's good fortune and bad fortune around that. So you think about 88 as like, you know, 88 wins is where we're planning to be, and then there's always good luck, and in some years that'll be 98 or 96, right? And in other years it'll be 79 or 80, right? But that sort of, we're wobbling around a good place because 88 is a good place to live, right? And all the years that we're lucky, maybe we can add a deadline and maybe we can win it all. That's honestly, you can see it everywhere. Arizona, Oakland was doing that for a long time. Just try to build a 82, 84 win team, and some days, in some years, it's 90, right? Arizona's been doing that. The Dodgers are just trying to be good every year, but they're a little bit, they have enough money to like where they can be. Hey, let's just 90. Aim for 92 or 94 every year. Yeah. You know, like, it is pervasive in the sport because of this idea of sustainability and keeping the farm system, two timelines, keeping the farm system going while you got your veterans and, you know, always yep. trying to be good. One thing that I would like to suggest that is, though, that, like, you know, winning 88 wins every year is not that fun for the fan base. I think that's sort of what you're talking about. It's like, you know, yes. if you won 88 every year and were like a wild card some years and lost in the wild card round, you would totally trade that for winning 98 for like 3 years and winning two World Series. And
for the World Nationals. The Nationals are a great example of this.
I think Nationals fans are, you know, they're mad about the state of the team, but are they like, I don't think they hate Rizzo because they
no,
like,
because flags fly forever. They won in 19. Yeah.
And think also about what are the things you remember across all sports? One of the things you remember across all sports are dynasties, you know, like yeah. Jordan's Bulls, you know? And so why not push the needle for a 3 year window to maybe get into the World Series twice? Or three times, you know, like, why not build an quote unquote all-star team for a short window and do that? Now, do I advocate going all in like the Padres did and spending $1.2 billion, you know, on players? I don't know. That's pretty aggressive. There's somewhere in between the Padres and Mariners. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. literally somewhere in between. Like, the Mariners could have added one more big free agent. And if they'd added one more big free agent that gave them 4 or 5 wins, they'd be a 93-win team. And they'd yeah. be in the DS.
You know? And Cal, who was it?
Cal Raleigh, the catcher, was saying
Raleigh,
that.
Yes. Yeah. Raleigh, who said that. And then they made him apologize later. And it's like, he was dead on. They need, you have to, if you're going to compete with these guns, look what Texas has done. You have to get one or two guys. I think you, like you mentioned, the Orioles kind of neglected to, at this offseason, I mean, at the trade deadline, really do much. They got Flaherty, who has been terrible. This offseason, they better go get some guys, right? Because it's like, if your window is now, you kind of want to push just a little out of the comfort zone. No one's saying trade 2 or 3 of your young guys and say, we're going to win the World Series the next 2 years or bust. But I think, as you said,
yeah, why not be more aggressive in free agency? It's not, it doesn't penalize you as much. I mean, yes, there are these luxury tax aprons and blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's a lot of functions from baseball that's trying to tamp down spending. The draft, you know, the luxury tax, that's all designed to tamp down spending. But when you do have room between you and the luxury tax and you're in your window, why not spend that? You know, like that's different than, I'm not necessarily saying you need to trade Jackson Holliday for Juan Soto at the deadline. You know what I mean? Like there's nuance in all of this. And, you know, I think Evan Drellick wrote a great piece. You know, I did read through some of the comments and there was some pushback about people being like, oh, so we should just all be the Padres. And I'm like,
Padres,
man,
and Mets. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a difference. There's room between the Orioles and Mariners and the Padres and Mets. There's somewhere in between. We don't have to, everything doesn't have to be black and white. It doesn't have to be 88 or 98, you know, like you could try to build a 95 win team. That would be pretty amazing. And that would get into the World Series more often than the 88 win team. I'm sure.
Yes. Exactly. And I also think some of these teams, especially like in the Central, like Cleveland, you could argue was a rain delay away from winning the World Series the year the Cubs won it, right? You could. But because they didn't win, it doesn't really buy you too much. Maybe a year or two where people are like, oh, that team was good, we almost won. They're in a bad division. Why not go all in, right? This is why the White Sox job was so appealing. And then they just did an internal promotion. Is like, that's a team that spends more usually than most of the rest of the division. And it's a bad division. Like, that's a prime place where you're like, we should be winning. We should be winning every year, right?
That's like an argument for it being like not the most terrible job, but there's a lot of institutional stuff that needs to get turned around there, I think.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's, you know, again, it's, I think if you win a World Series,
but the White Sox have won a World Series more recently than a lot of these sustainable.
A lot of these. Yeah.
I mean, Mariners have never been to the World Series.
Correct. So it's like, what do you value, right? Do fans can't get upset because fans have been sold this lie of like efficiency and market type and like, oh, our team can never be these big spenders. So it's really good that we can still get in sometimes, right? Like fans have been sold this ridiculous line that like, oh, we're a small market team. If we get in, just getting in is a big deal.
Christian Yelich said, you know, what we've been able to do here as a small market team is really remarkable. And it's like, as a Brewers fan,
is it
like, are you super excited about it? And I'm a guy who does value regular season wins. So I do think on some level the Brewers have been remarkable, but they could have been better. It didn't work out. Like, there's a lot of stuff that didn't work out.
It's not like they had one really deep run. They haven't been able to, you know, it'd be remarkable if, like, the Rays, remarkable. The Rays go to the World Series and lose. You know, they've won playoff series. You know, that's remarkable. As you mentioned, they've had some issues as of late. But I don't know. To me, it just feels like so many fan bases are like, well, you know, we just got to wait for our window. And then when their window's here, we're like, well, we got to make sure we keep everything together so that we have a long window. And it's like, really, though? Because I'd rather win a World Series and my team be bad for 2-3 years. You know, not a total teardown, but like, you know, just be bad for a couple years, because then I had the experience of the team I rooted for going to the World Series and my team every year being a fringy wild card team.
And we can slag the Padres all we want, but there have been a lot more people going to games, you know, recently.
It's a huge deal. There's over 3 million. Yeah, it's huge. They're very into that whole thing.
And that's the closest thing we had to like somebody being YOLO and going all in, you
know? Yeah. I mean, but the Phillies, there's some good examples in the playoffs. The Phillies are, John Middleton is very much, I think he was quoted as saying like, do people care if I win or lose money? Like, people don't care if I'm losing or making money. People want to win. I think more of that mindset would be helpful. So good for Seattle and for the fan base for not taking those comments well. Right. Like,
on the flip side, like DePoto, like, you can't throw out all the good he's done. They've been a, you know, 88 to 90 win team the last 3 years. He's kind of, you know, he's doing what he's promised, quote unquote. Like, he's turned around a team. It's better. Player development's better. You know,
sure,
he's done some good, but
this is on ownership, though, saying like, hey, we will give you more money to spend. Well, he said the quiet part out loud.
Yeah, and the whole like doing the fans a favor, he made a look when he said that, and he knew it was a bad thing to say, and just like don't get into that. Like, I think he wanted to explain, like, oh, this is why, you know, what we did was good. But I would say, just say the bland stuff. Just say the bland stuff. We're getting there. We're working towards there. We're getting better. We're getting better every year.
Yeah, I don't know. The issue there is that at the beginning of the season, the Marlins president of business ops said in an event, and it was on TV, we asked you to be patient. We're not asking you to be patient anymore.
Mariners.
And then somebody spliced that. And then Mariners or Marlins?
No, it was the Mariners one. The Mariners.
Yeah,
one.
Mariners. Yeah. Sorry, Mariners. Yeah. And then you have, DePoto saying, "Well, we still need you to be patient." It's like you're sending mixed messages. Fans can't be patient every year. Like, ownership needs to say, you know what? We do need to spend $10-20 million more next year.
You have Julio Rodriguez, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert. You know, like you have a core.
Push the chips. Yeah. Yes. Push the chips. Get everyone excited. As you know, making trade deadline acquisitions sometimes isn't just about the guys you get. It's about the message you're sending to that clubhouse.
And again, hey, for like the second straight year, they traded away a big bullpen piece of somebody that people liked, you know?
Yeah. It sends no message. The Marlins, you know, had they not made those moves, they're not in the playoffs. Had they not added to their lineup.
And it didn't cost them a lot. You know, Josh Bell cost them a guy they were going to cut anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, it wasn't a huge, you didn't have to make this huge earth-shattering thing, but also it lets the clubhouse know we believe in you. Let's go.
Right.
So just, I don't know, unfortunate. Seattle, you deserve better. Mariners fans, you deserve better. Be patient. Keep being patient.
Yeah, right.
It's not good.
No, we're not saying that. But yell. Anyway. Yell as much as you'd like.
Exactly. Yes. Maybe next week we'll talk about, you know, people who are eliminated, who they should be bandwagoning, because there should be some good teams to bandwagon. This time next week, we probably will know who is onto the LCS, right? We may know. We should know.
And how all the favorites are going to advance after I picked all the dogs.
So you could take all your money now to Vegas and bet against, you know, let me know how that goes. We have to go. It was great chatting with you, you know, as always. Derek Van Riper will be back, I think, next week from paternity leave,
so,
right?
Yeah.
He will be back. So you will have a streamlined show. You just won't have Eno and I babbling with no rundown, no plans,
no rundown today
at all. At all, ever. We haven't made a rundown since Derek left. So our captain of the ship will be back next week to get us through the rest of October. In the meantime, subscribe to The Athletic, follow us on Twitter at @Britt_Giroli. He's at Eno Saris. Give us a comment, but only if it's a nice one. I read those. And have a great rest of your day and a great weekend watching some postseason baseball. Thanks for listening to the 3-0 show.
You've got always got the green light here.
Green light 3-0, and she's gone!